WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Happy Festivus, happy New Year, happy bye week, happy get ready for maybe an AFC championship game here sometime soon. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery are putting me back out on the road in conjunction with Window Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi Care. We're going to be doing Crab Cake Row beginning on February 5th. And that's all I'm saying about it for now. Until we win a playoff game, I ain't saying bupkis around here. And this guy was here for some playoff disappointments. He covered the Baltimore Colts, and this always gets me a chance to get my trusty dusty 1977 Sears and Roebuck NFL officially licensed belt buckle out. Clark Judge joins us now from parts unknown, somewhere between Connecticut and Manhattan. What is that?
Baltimore Colts pennant. It's a Baltimore Colts pennant that I used to have when I was a kid. And then you've got this, which adorns my desk. Of course, my favorite player of all time, Mr. John. If you were to see my wall, there's a 16x20 photo of John Unitas up here. There's a 16x20 photo of Raymond Berry up here. So, and I've got John Unitas. I wrote him in 1959. Autographed photo of John Unitas in Westminster. So it's great. Yeah, I love the Colts. I love the Colts.
All I see is John Elway every time I see you. You got to take that off the wall.
Yeah, but below John Elway is John Unitas right there. And it's an autograph.
It should never be below John Elway right
and,
here.
And
but...
see this? If you can
I'm an
see
Elway
this.
Guy. I loved Elway. So, I.
Well, I covered that draft. And when he, said he's not playing in Baltimore. Finally, the day before, if you recall, it was Marvin Demoff, who was his agent, said he doesn't want to play for Frank Kush. Well, everyone understood that. But up until that point, he had impugned the integrity of Baltimore and its people. And so people disliked him, rightly so at that point. If they had simply said, talking about the Elway side, we don't want to play for Kush, people would understand that. They really would. But I think had he played for Baltimore, which I think eventually he would have if they hadn't traded him, Colts would still be there. But anyway, that's over the water over the
yeah, day. You know what? So I'm doing a thing for the Maryland Food Bank, full disclosure, and I'll tell more people about it later, but I'm trying to feed people. But I was at the Indianapolis Food Bank at the Taste of the NFL event with Wayne Kostrowski back at the Indianapolis Super Bowl. And I at the Cleveland Browns booth where they serve some sort of pierogi or whatever at Cleveland, something it was going to make me flatulent that I was going to regret with mustard on it. Later on, Al Bubba Baker was standing there. I'll never forget. I put a camera on him. I have it out on YouTube. He told me, of course I wanted to hurt Burt Jones. Of course I meant to hurt him, literally. And I was like, oh! I couldn't. And I'm thinking that to me was the end of the franchise. For me, when did you get here? Clark, by the way, is a legendary Hall of Fame voter, Talk of Fame, has been a great mentor to me and mentor to mentors of mine. By the way, I had lunch with Mike Marlowe about 6 months ago. So full disclosure, I'm a 16, 17-year-old kid working at the paper. And all Mike Marlowe could talk about is this great writer named Clark Judge. And then later in life, I find you covering the San Diego Superchargers. But man, you had a whole history of all of this. So when I have somebody like you on, if people don't know your credentials, I want them to know your credentials I want you to humble brag. But when you were at the Evening Sun, correct?
Yeah, 79. I got there in 79.
So it was over. So you were not at the Burt Jones.
No,
you
Burt
got
was still
Burt
there.
At the
Burt,
end.
But I got Burt at the end. Burt was hurt. Yeah, I got Burt at the end. And I was there 79 to 84 and then moved out to San Diego. Got the end of the Air Coryell. Team that was.
Did you literally leave Baltimore because the football team left? Did you literally?
Yes.
It affected your life. Wow.
It did, and so I wasn't sure what I was going to be doing at that point, and we had a sports editor then named Mike Davis who was great, and he had said to me, "Listen, you've got an opportunity to go to San Diego. I wish you could stay here, but I have nothing to offer you." And I said, "Well, most people say they want to go there. I want to stay here. I want to stay here." He goes, "But there's really nothing for you to do here. Everything else is covered and the Colts are gone." And I'd done the NFL the year before. I'd done the NFL because they brought back another writer to do the Colts at that point. I'd done the NFL and I loved it. And I'd been out to San Diego and sure, I think I loved it. So I went out there and then I found, I really loved covering that team. It was a lot of fun to watch. But that was the end of the Air Coryell regime. They weren't very good. They were electric. They could put a lot of points on the board, but they really couldn't win many games. And I don't think they had a winning season until when I was there, until the 87 strike year, and Don was gone. They had Al Saunders then. They went 8-1 and lost their last six games. I left there in 94 to go up to the Bay Area and cover the 49ers. And lo and behold, the 1994 Super Bowl, who was it? It's the Chargers and the 49ers. So I knew two teams so well that I knew exactly what was going to happen there. In fact, I knew the Chargers better than the team I was covering. But covering the 49ers was one of the greatest moments, probably the greatest moment of my career, because they were established people. The media relations with the team was pretty good. You could be access these guys easily. I could get Steve Young 6 out of 7 days. I mean, Sunday, he was always there. Monday, I'd be there. Tuesday, their day off, right?
It's a different expectation from players about how to treat people and treating the media. You treated the media better than you treated the fans.
No
because
question.
They portrayed you to the fans.
Yeah, but there wasn't the breadth of media, quote unquote media, that there is now. No one knows who's writing what and where they're from. I mean, there are all sorts of people out there. And honestly, I don't blame NFL teams for being skeptical about who am I talking to. There are no relationships anymore. You could develop a relationship because I lived out there. I was single. And so I basically lived at Santa Clara. And on Saturdays, they have their walkthroughs. Well, no one's going to practices on Saturdays. And today, I'm sure you're forbidden. But I said, George Seifert, I want to come out here because there are often stories that are out there. And he goes, come on out. I was the only guy there.
The more relationship I had from Kevin Burns' perspective. Now, look, dude, I'm in a whole different place, Clark. I mean, you know, I'm here begging for a team. Bring Baltimore the ball. Three owners. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Bidwell, Frontier. I mean, down in Houston, Bud. They were all going to come here, but they weren't. And then Art shows up, right? Like, you said you were on the league beat in 83, 84.
Yeah,
you knew the team was leaving, right? I mean, you knew.
I was doing.
You were on
about
the team
that.
Is was leaving like, beat is what you really
yeah,
were on. Right?
Exactly.
You weren't on the. They weren't winning the Super Bowl with Mike Pagel, dude. You know, or Arch. You were on the Arch Schleister's betting the ponies beat too.
Yeah,
right?
But except they didn't put me on that necessarily. They had me coming sort of the game of the week or the story of the week. I mean, I went back to Pittsburgh to cover Terry Bradshaw's last game. Now they played in New York, but I went there on Tuesday, which is generally or maybe it's Wednesday. I'm going in to see Terry Bradshaw because he's going to play this weekend. He'd been hurt. Remember that? He'd been hurt. So he's coming back. There were two people from out of town there to see Terry Bradshaw, me and Fred Mitchell from the Chicago Tribune. Today, there'd be 2,000 people there. But there were two people. We got Terry for a half an hour. He was great. So they sent me to stories like that. I did Elway going out. I went out to San Diego when the Broncos played San Diego. They went out to see Elway and do a story on him. It's the day they won, he lined up behind guard instead of center. It was a legendary story, but then he gets behind center. But John was very close-mouthed about Baltimore. He didn't want to say anything. But over the years, I got to really like him and admire him and realize what a talent the guy was and how he could have changed the face of Baltimore sports had he stayed. I mean, I believe like Ernie Accorsi, had he stayed, the Colts would still be there.
Clark Judge is here. He and I are debating Elway versus Burt Jones and all that. But let's bring us to modern football. Listen, man, I'm thrown out of Radio Row. You know, you married into NFL. Your life, your wife, your family, everything you ever did. You're sort of sequestered where you are right now. Do you go to games much anymore?
No,
or ever?
No, I don't. I mean, the COVID really killed that. I mean, COVID killed it. And then I realized, I don't really need to do it. I can maintain a relationship with these people that I want to maintain a relationship with easily by phone or text or whatever. And I don't need to go to games. And at that point, actually, I had gone from the Bay Area to work at Fox, and I worked at CBS for many years. And I realized when the last year at CBS, I said, I don't think we should be covering games anymore because people don't want to read game stories. They want to read analysis. The best analysis is to go in the week of, I mean, go in before the game or after the game or whatever. But so I stopped doing that. And actually, I find it's more enjoyable to me. I'm starting to sort of move, away from it because I'm older. I look at some of what's going on and I go, I don't understand what the heck is going on.
The gambling part straight away for anybody. Yeah. I've had a press credential for 39 years, be 39 years this week that I walked into the News American sports first with many of your friends and colleagues, people we know as a kid. And I can't, you know, like it's different, and it's we're not different. Going back. And it's okay that we're not going back, but I am wondering what it is, because the one thing that would have gotten you or I thrown out of our career and scarlet lettered is if you were shaving points with Steve Young, knowing something was up back in 1995, asking him how his ankle was doing so you could go bet on it or give the information to a bookie.
No question. No question. And in fact, I know of a group of reporters, and I'm not going to name them, who were in a press box back in the late 90s. And I'm not going to name the individual, but they were doing fantasy football in the late 90s. They're talking about it in the press box. And an individual who was a club executive came to them and said, "You're talking about gambling. I'm going to report you to the league office and you're going to get thrown out of the press box." That's how the league looked at it this time, at that time. Now they embrace it. I mean, you can't
turn
on
the Super Bowl's in Vegas in 3 weeks. Come on,
Super Bowl's in Vegas, and you can't watch it. You can't watch a football game without Kurt Warner or Tony Gonzalez or somebody pumping DraftKings or whatever. I mean, it's amazing the about face they've done. And I'll tell you what I mentioned to you. You said that am I still going to games? No, I'm not. I've got a website which is Talk of Fame 2, which I've done for many years with Rick Dawson and Ron Borges, but I now do it with John Turney, who is a historian. And it's based more on a lot of what's going on in terms of historical perspective. We put a Hall of Fame slant on things. So I do that, and I really enjoy that as a Hall of Fame selector. I'm the board of selectors. But I also do a podcast with Ira Kaufman, who's a Hall of Fame selector. And we get
– And a Hall of Fame person, by the way, Ira. I love you, Ira. Hello.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And we do that each week, and we get notable guests. So we talk a lot about what's gone on in the past, but put them in context of what's going on today. And it's just a different game. And that's the thing when I said I don't understand. It's such a different game where people are doing jumping jacks over something that's happened with, let's say, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes, and say, we've never seen this before. And somebody posted on Twitter, for instance, a video, and I think you'd remember it, as a game against Baltimore, where Patrick Mahomes rolled right late in the game and stopped and threw back left about 50 yards down the field. It was Tyreek Hill streaking down the field, and he hit him. And someone wrote, "Have we ever seen this before?" And knows it, normally I don't respond to things like that, Nestor, because in Twitter it can be a cesspool of allegations and name calling. But I don't respond. This time I did, because I said, I saw it. I saw John Elway do this at Stanford many times, you know. And so when we say we've never seen Lamar Jackson, I saw Michael Vick. All right, I mean, it doesn't mean we're not trying to demean these guys. But we have seen it, but there's no historical perspective. And if it didn't happen 5 minutes ago, people don't want to know about it. And you know, someone who's younger could say, "Yeah, you're just an old guy, and yeah, it's get off my lawn and all that stuff." Well, I understand that. I understand.
Well, there's
that.
Value in people's wisdom that young people, and maybe when we were young, didn't. Maybe we respected it enough because we were journalists and trying to get the facts. And the only way to get the facts was to sit and talk to John Stedman about what really happened, right?
That's
And then trust that information if that was a person of integrity. I mean, that's how the whole planet worked before Trump.
I don't know if it was before Trump, but it doesn't work that way anymore. And when I was a kid, I'd say to my dad, "Have you ever seen anyone like Unitas? I mean, you know, I've never seen anyone like Unitas." And he said, "Yeah, I saw Otto Graham." And we go, "Otto Graham." Well, then if you know about Otto Graham, you go, "Wait a minute, played 10 years, went to a championship game every year, won 7 of them." I mean, how can you do any better than that? Otto Graham was the best of his era. Unitas was the best of his era. So today when people say, you know, I mean, Tom Brady, is he the best of all time? He's the best of his era. And that's good enough. That's good enough for me. But we want to make these labels best of all time and everything. Yeah, Tom Brady is a great quarterback. But you see Unitas, people saw Unitas, you go, "Nobody had trust more with a ball with 2 minutes to go. Now it's 1 minute or 30 seconds, whatever."
Clark Judge is here. He is Talk of Fame. He is a Hall of Fame voter and a longtime historian of all things quarterback. All right, so let's start at the beginning here before we get to Lamar with Joe Flacco. And
this
Joe
it's a
Flacco
great story.
Thing, right? I mean, people say to me, "Do you root for the Ravens? You can't be rooting for the Browns or Flacco." I'm like, you know what, man? I was taught when I was young by a lot of mentors who mentored you, the Jack Gibbons and the Bob, you know, root for the story. Right? You know, if I was a kid finding you in a press box out of Jack Murphy Stadium, say I'm a young writer, Ken Rosenthal, whatever, root for the story.
That's
My
right.
God, the story is, you know, I'm pulling for Joe on Saturday. I don't know about the story of him coming back here next week against Lamar, but that could be part of the story too. But this thing's got Stafford in Detroit. No, this thing's rich with storylines.
It is. It's rich with storylines. I love what Joe Flacco is doing. I love Joe Flacco because, first of all, you covered him. You saw him every day. I covered him only when I drop
he
in.
He was
there,
my Steve Young, right? So yeah. In that way, right? I mean,
right.
Totally.
And you look at what he did in 2012. You go, wow. I mean, 11 touchdown passes, no interception, MVP. I mean, he had such a great run. And I thought handled himself with class and dignity and continues to do so, even more so now. How do you root for the Browns? That's a good question. I mean, this is the team that gave $230 million guaranteed to Deshaun Watson. I go, it's Jimmy Haslam. Well, how can you root for that team? Well, Joe Flacco is how you can root for him. And when I watch him play, I go, God, I love it. And like you said, you root for the story. He's a great story. So am I rooting for the Browns this weekend? Absolutely. Am I rooting for the Browns to play the Ravens? Absolutely. It's a great story. I love what's going on with Joe Flacco in particular and Cleveland generally.
Well, it's the time of year we get all the fired coaches, but we also get sort of the anointing of the next, right? And that was Hurts last year. This year it might be CJ Stroud. And, you know, talking about that game and that team, they opened the season here. You know, I thought literally they would be the worst team in the NFL or among the five. You know, I thought rookie quarterback, I mean, the noxious nature of their ownership and what's going on with their leadership and how disjointed it all became and how awful it was and the cover up on the Deshaun Watson and the fumigation and all. Right. I just thought, to me, bad owners, right? We talk about Irsay, we talk about Angelos here, whatever. Bad will always go back to bad and default back to bad. I thought there's no chance. And now they have a resuscitation through D'Amico Ryans and former players coaching. There's really something to all of that, all the way around from Jim Harbaugh cheating his way to a championship the other night down in Houston, Michigan. But there, D'Amico Ryans coming in there and them getting a quarterback, and everybody wants the quarterback. Carolina, there's an indictment there. Zach Wilson in New York. I mean, all of these young quarterbacks, but it feels like when you find one, you hug him and say, this is the new Johnny Bravo for the next little while. Yeah. And it feels like this isn't the last time that the Texans are going to make the playoffs.
No, I think it's the first of many times. You look at what's going on there. They've got things turned around. They're doing things the right way. Management seems to know what it's doing. You know, strangely enough, because you mentioned ownership, really, I thought with Robert McNair, I thought it was on the right track. I mean, I know people pick apart certain things that he said or did or whatever, but I thought generally, I got to know him pretty well. I thought he was a pretty decent guy. But you look at what happened in the last couple of years, you think they'll never dig themselves out. And you look in 1 year, it's a complete turnaround. D'Amico Ryans has done a great job there, but they've now got the right guy. They've got talent really in a lot of places. And in that division, they can lord over those teams for a while. Now, I think Indianapolis has got itself sort of straightened out too. I think they've got the right head coach there. We'll just see what happens. But in Houston, it's a great, you talk about the stories. That's a great story, what CJ Stroud's doing. And they had to wait in line for him, right? I mean, Lovie Smith did them a favor by winning that last game last year. You know, they get the second pick, and Carolina jumps for Bryce Young. And so they get CJ Stroud. They got the better quarterback, it looks like. Now, I'm not ready to write off Bryce Young, but it looks like they got the better quarterback. But you're right. It's a good team. They're doing great things there. D'Amico Ryans is a coach of the year candidate, legitimately so. I do think Kevin Stefanski will get that vote. I vote on that. I'm leaning towards Kevin Stefanski because of what he's done there. He's won with four different quarterbacks. Pretty good. It's pretty good.
Well, especially good if they're still playing next weekend, by the way, Clark. And you know, I would just say this on the on the coaching side and the carousel, and I mean, whatever's going to happen to Mike McDonald, and I've even heard Monken and the Falcons.
Yeah, Monken, yeah.
Commanders, Belichick's out there. I mean, like all of this stuff that's happening, you know, beyond all of this, the football itself this weekend and the quarterbacks and the legacies and Lamar measuring up and the amount of heat there's been on him in so many ways, different quarterback, different kind of player, the contract last year, his health, the way he plays the game, the steps he's taken to become a better pocket passer and all that. It only gets measured by winning that. They can't even win this weekend. They've got the bye, but for me, with how he's measured against other quarterbacks, and you are the ultimate in voting on Hall of Famers and different things, like What do you say about Lamar when they put you on national radio or a guy from Baltimore calls us? What do you make of his game and where he is? Because I had Dave Shinen and Rasig on, and we did a crab cake tour at Coco's back in the summer, and the Orioles were on fire, and we're talking. And I said to Shinen and Rasig, I said, all right, guys, let's talk about the next championship here. Is it going to be the Orioles or is it going to be the Ravens? And the Orioles were on their way to winning 101 games and blah, 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 and whatever. And we were all wound up, and Lamar just signed the contract and just kind of got through the mess and didn't show up for the playoff game last year in Cincinnati, which I still always think is a little screwy.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Shinen said neither. And I thought, wow. He said, well, the odds are always sort of stacked against. So that being said, I said, Lamar, it would be harder for the football team to win because of the crowd of quarterbacks, right? So you always think Joe Burrow is going to be in line here right now.
Yeah, right.
I thought Trevor Lawrence would be in line here. Now you're going to tell me CJ Stroud's going to, you know, you can move to the top of class, you know, past the number, the other 1-1 who won national, like all that, who looked awful the last month, looked hurt, quite frankly.
So
all of that being said, all these quarterbacks, now that we're really here, dude, Lamar's got the week off, okay, earned MVP. They only spent 4 minutes of the season behind by more than one score. Do the math on that, and it happened in week 17. They were not behind by more than 7 points at any point in the season until the last 4 minutes of a game. They weren't trying, right, in the rain. That's the DVOA. I got shots coming on this week. They're the DVAO. Go. I mean, they're the greatest show on, but whatever it is, balance, all of that stuff. And yet I look now, and I'm thinking, who's he really going to have to beat? And I know it's not quarterback on quarterback, but we make it that way. And I'm thinking, he doesn't even have to beat Mahomes and Allen, because it only can be one of them, not the other one.
That's right.
And this is a different pathway, what we're staring at right now in regard to expectation, even for me to say, well, Mahomes isn't Mahomes because the Chiefs aren't the Chiefs and whatever, that they're 2 hours away from going to the Super Bowl. They're 1 hour away from winning a game next week to have an AFC championship game here for the first time. And I knew you didn't cover the 71 Colts, Clark, but I thought you really might have covered the 77 Colts. I thought you might have been Ghost of the Post. But this is sort of a legendary thing. And now if I have Shinen or Sig or you or whatever saying, pathway looks a little different to getting a parade here than having to beat on the road Burrow, Mahomes, Allen, go to Buffalo. All that's taken out of this now. They're expected to win the Super Bowl. And that's hard, man.
Yeah, that is hard. That is hard. You know, it's funny. Earlier this year, and I'm saying really early this year, I remember writing after a game that Baltimore had won, are they a legitimate Super Bowl contender? And my question was, I don't know. And my answer was, I don't know. I mean, the question was, are they legitimate? And my answer was, I don't know. And I don't think they will be because of Lamar Jackson. It wasn't ability. It's got extraordinary ability. It was health. So what do we know about the last couple of years? He couldn't get through a season. Well, some games, I mean, you remember one game they ran him 27 times. You can't do that with a quarterback. He's going to break. You just can't do it. He's brittle. You look at his numbers were declining. I said, I just don't see how he gets through the season. Well, he got through the season. He is the MVP. He might be a unanimous choice again. He should be. I certainly will vote for him. But there's one hurdle that's left for him, and that's the playoffs. What's his playoff record? It's 1-3. And you said, yeah, it's not quarterback against quarterback. You're right. But, you know, Ryan Tannehill came in there with Derrick Henry and they won. I mean, so and Lamar Jackson wasn't very good in that game. So that now is sort of the next benchmark. All right. They are the team to beat. It's a difficult landscape to navigate when you are the team to beat. But there are people like you mentioned Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs have been the team to beat for the last 3 or 4 years in the AFC. He handles that well. How are the Ravens going to handle this? What happens when they get behind? Remember, there used to be a stat a year ago where they are when they're traveling, when they're behind at halftime. What happens to them then? So what happens when they are down by two scores? What happens now? And I think that
if you don't go down, you don't know, right? If you don't fall behind, you don't have to find out.
That's right. And so this team is so good that they really haven't been in that position. But what happens? That's not to try to take anything away from him. I'm telling you right now, as I said, he should be unanimous MVP. There's no one really even close. I would say if I were to pick a second guy, might be McCaffrey. I covered that 49ers team. He makes that team go. It's not Purdy. It's McCaffrey. Everything happens around him. But when you watch what Lamar Jackson is and what he means to that ball club, you know, where are the other luminaries there? Well, I mean, he doesn't have a Hall of Fame wide receiver. I know they're good. I mean, Odell Beckham's good at times, but he's not catching 10 balls a game. And you've got Zay's good player. I mean, he's young. He's good. Andrew's a good player, but he's been out, you know, and then Likely comes in. Wow, it's everything's working. You're running the ball well. He's doing everything right. And he stayed in the huddle. That was the big hurdle. Could he stay? Longevity, durability. That was the hurdle he had to pass. We did. He has. And now he's gotten a couple weeks off. He didn't have to play last weekend. Have a bye week. You know, the future is all about him now with Baltimore. And so it's up to him to sort of rise to the occasion. He's done it again and again this year. I have no doubt they can do it. The question is, will they? And I think that's a valid question.
We call these Wise Conversations. Our friends at Wise Markets put them on. We're going to be talking more about the Maryland Food Bank next month. Our friends at Wise Markets do a lot for them as well. And we're doing something during the Radio Row week called Crab Cake Row. I'll be telling you more about that in the coming weeks. It'll all be brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation. And our friends at Jiffy Lube, Clark Judge, the great Clark Judge, is our guest here. You can follow his act out on the X's and the Twitters and the Talk of Fame. He also has a podcast where he invites all sorts of sort of legends that he knows and has covered over parts of five decades now. You're not that old. I mean, you still feel young and vibrant and all that stuff.
You feel young and vibrant until I look in the mirror. But yeah, in that podcast, we had Burt Jones on with his father, Dub. It was a great one. It was just great. As you know, I love Burt Jones. I love watching him play. And again, if you try to talk to people today about Burt Jones and you have someone say, who? You go, I mean, who? Roll the video of Burt Jones. He carried a team on his shoulders. Watch that guy. I mean, he was so charismatic. To me, he was as charismatic in Baltimore as Brett Favre was in Green Bay. I loved watching him play. So I guess historical perspective, one good thing about getting older is having watched people like that and knowing what they were and being a part of that, being around that. It was so much fun to watch the Colts. It was so much fun to watch the Colts then.
He was swashbuckling. Oh, I would say that would be my word for him. So Clark, the rest of this field in the AFC and the experience of Harbaugh, the fact that DaCosta didn't just bring these sort of older Zeitler, Moses, Van Noy, Clowney, the trade for Roquan Smith, the drafting of Kyle Hamilton, Harbaugh getting together with the cheating brother and bringing in the, you know, and the McDonald back and forth and this whole connection that I don't know how it's going to be once he takes the Chargers job or whatever job he's going to take this week, because he'll have a job by the time people hear this week.
That's right.
I mean, Jim Harbaugh will be in the National Football League by the time, certainly by the time the Eagles play the Buccaneers on Monday night. So that's
I would think it'd either be the Chargers or the Raiders. I would think it'd be one of those two teams.
Yeah, fair enough. But so all of that being said, this tournament and what the Ravens represent for having pretty good health. I mean, Andrews aside and wherever they are with Humphrey and Hamilton, but the decision making and the book and all, as Belichick leaves with the hoodie over his head and the snow of losing to the Jets and the ignominy, you know, all of that, this is their chance to shine as an organization. What gets in the way here? Where are you with Kansas City, with Buffalo, with Cleveland, with, I don't know, Mason Rudolph, even at this point in the tournament this weekend? And I think we all look at Miami going to freeze their ass off on Saturday night in Kansas City and saying they're really, it's the worst thing in the world to limp into the playoffs and not be healthy.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, what gets in their way? Buffalo. That Buffalo gets in their way. And for two reasons. One, they've got momentum. Two, they've got Josh Allen. And the momentum counts for a lot. They won their last five games. They beat Kansas City in Kansas City. They beat Dallas. They beat Miami in Miami. They've got something to prove. Now, the problem is Josh Allen also. He turns the ball over a lot. And you saw that last week. They to me, were by far the better team. Not by far, but they were the better team in Miami. But they kept beating themselves. And it got to the fourth quarter. I said, they're not going to win this game because they can't get out of their own way. And lo and behold, then we have the 96-yard punt return. But Josh Allen is special. And they have something to prove. I think that team can circle the bases. But if he does what he's done in the past and the recent past and take gambles that he shouldn't, and just part of his DNA, kind of like Brett Favre, you know, then you suffer the consequences. Baltimore is a better team, but I don't know what happens if Buffalo gets up by, 10 points or so. I don't know what happens if Josh Allen is playing like he did against Kansas City 2 or 3 years ago, that overtime game. He was slinging it left and right, and he couldn't make any mistakes. He's a guy who's capable of doing it. Kansas City, you know, it should be the team that you go, well, okay, they go into Buffalo and win. Yeah, they could. they're not right. That team's just not right this year. If you've watched them all year, and I have, there's something wrong offensively. And people say, yeah, drop a lot of passes. Oh, that's true. Yeah, they do. Mahomes is not playing very well. People didn't want to acknowledge that until recently. It was always, my God, memories haven't seen anything like this.
What is it? They're capable of playing well this week at home in the cold against the Dolphins. Are they capable of playing well next week in the cold in Buffalo?
In Buffalo. I mean, are they capable? Sure. I mean, if you've got Mahomes, is anything possible? But then you look at the track record this year. Are they suddenly going to be the team that they haven't been for 18 weeks or 17 games? And I don't think so. I mean, they weren't very good at home either. I mean, they just have been not a team that was rolling and smooth. And people want to focus on the drop passes. There's a lot of dysfunction there in that offense that hasn't been. Defensively, that's what's keeping them in games. Their defense has been pretty good. Can they force the turnovers in Buffalo? Can they force the turnovers against Miami? They can. I think Miami's speed would be a factor. But when it's 5 degrees, no, I don't think that's going to be the case. And so that's going to be, I hate to say this, but with those two teams, probably a defensive game, right? And I trust Kansas City's defense more than I do Miami's. And so now you go to Buffalo. Well, Buffalo's used to playing in that. And now Kansas City's going there. What are they going to be like? They've already lost to the Bills during the season. That happened in the past, Nestor. You know, Buffalo would go into Kansas City, beat them during the season. That happened. Then they'd go into Kansas City and play them in the playoffs. Didn't happen. I don't think that's going to be the case here. But can I see Kansas City beating in succession Miami, Buffalo, and Baltimore? And the answer is no.
All the Ravens have to do is win one game against the guy not named Allen or Mahomes at home in order to play one of those two guys in order to go to the Super Bowl. Clark Judge is here. NFC side, I know you're pro 49er, and yeah, we could talk about what happened on Christmas night, but the rest of the field over there, boy, oh boy, oh boy.
It's not an interesting conference. I mean, it's San Francisco and a cast of thousands. When people say, what about Dallas? Well, San Francisco destroyed them earlier this year. And I realize it's a different time, right? A different time. But San Francisco will destroy them again. I mean, San Francisco can run the ball. They can run it very effectively with Debo or with Christian McCaffrey or whoever they put out there. I mean, they've got a zillion people. But Dallas is playing very well right now. But San Francisco knows we own these guys. They know that. And they do, they beat them in the playoffs all the time. It's a different deal than it was in the 90s, you know, when I was covering them, and Dallas was the team to beat. San Francisco is the team to beat. And they are head and shoulders above everyone else. So who's going to be the second place team? I think it's probably going to be Dallas, I would guess, at this point. Could someone emerge? I think the Rams are kind of scary. I mean, the Rams got in there and they're playing well. They're still playing so far above their heads. They're the Houston Texans of the NFC. They weren't expected to do anything. You know, they had salary cap problems. Stafford was hurt. They lost Cooper Kupp, and then Kupp comes back, and all of a sudden, Puka Nacua is like, whoa, what a revelation. Running backs, they lost left and right. They're suddenly there. They drafted very well. They've got good young players. Matthew Stafford's playing well. You're right. The game this weekend against Detroit, I think they win that game. I think they win it because Detroit has trouble in the secondary. Stafford's going to be pumped up. I think they win that game. That's a scary team. But I look at the rest of the field and go, wait, you mean Tampa Bay? No. Philadelphia's DOA. I mean, that's sad what's happened to the Eagles. A month ago, we would have said Philadelphia and San Francisco. The Eagles are done. They're done. I think they could lose to Tampa Bay. So where is the next best team? Probably Dallas by a process of elimination. And as I said, I think the 49ers can lap the field with them.
Clark Judge is here. He's been covering the National Football League since at least 1979. That wasn't such a great year at all. By the way, I was looking through my pictures the other day, and yeah. my family gave me a Pentax camera in 1983 for my birthday. I had one. I had a JCPenney, so I take pictures. I have pictures of the Packers-Colts snow game during the winless 2008-1 year. Pictures of Lynn Dickey.
I covered that game.
Yeah. I have pictures of James Lofton. Every time I would get in an elevator with James Lofton covering, Hall of Famer, covering football, we get in an elevator. I was like, dude, Packers game, Memorial Stadium. I got pictures of you. So I found the pictures recently, as well as Triumph and Rush and Van Halen, because they used to sneak my camera in, take pictures at the Capitol Center back in the day. So
you have any Todd Rundgren pictures? Any Todd Rundgren pictures in there?
So no. I'm glad you ask about the great Todd Rundgren, because I finally saw Todd Rundgren in person for the first time in my life. And he wasn't doing Rundgren songs. About a year and a half ago, it was Halloween. A year and a half ago, they did the David Bowie tour with Adrian
Oh,
Belew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know it. Yeah.
They did that at Ram's Head. And but Thomas Dolby, who's a friend of mine who lives here in Baltimore, the great Thomas Dolby, he's going to be touring next year. He came down and did a tribute to Bowie because of Live Aid. He was the musical director for Bowie's band at Live Aid. Swear to like,
Oh, wow.
oh my God. He tells a story of him and Bowie taking a helicopter into Wembley that day. And Bowie being a nervous helicopter, he was smoking a cigarette in the helicopter. And Dolby's like, I was choking to death as we're coming in. Oh, Dolby's the best. Oh. So, but that night, Rundgren played and sang these Bowie songs. And I have such a weird man crush thing on Rundgren without ever seeing him or appreciating Utopia or appreciating his work with Meatloaf and Bad at Out. Like, he's a real bucket list top 20 living, breathing human I've never had on the show that if I could get his attention for 25 minutes, I really Hawaii and Kauai and the Philadelphia thing and his ear for music and his voice. And I feel cheated that I didn't really appreciate Todd as God the way you have most of your life, you know?
Yeah, no, I first saw him in 73 when he came to the University of Missouri, and I saw him in 73. And then I went out to San Francisco and saw him in Winterland that spring with Utopia. And I've seen him 85 times now. And I just can't get enough of Todd. And I've got pictures galore in here that I've taken him. Central Park. I've seen him in a zillion places, but it's
so
funny.
So you never rented his place in Kauai or anything?
No, right? No. I was more interested in seeing his house in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, actually. I did see him at the Tower Theater in Upper Darby. But anyway, it was I love watching him. Honestly, my life has been enriched by him. And you and I've talked together many times about rock and roll music. And I
feel that way about me. I said to my wife, we were going to Costas literally to get food. We were going to watch college game. And a song came on the radio, and I said to her, because she knows like my association with sports has changed greatly. Like I'm a kid that's lived my whole life, 40 years of doing this, to be thrown out by these creeps in front of the world is, and have someone like you ask me, what did you do? I'm like, ask them, you know? So, but music is still very, despite the fact that I had a run in with a rock star here or there or whatever, you lose respect for certain people when you find out that they're, you know, pedophiles or that they're racist or, you know, all of those things you could do, Michael Jackson, you know, whatever it is. There's still something pure to me about music, Clark, right? And I would say for you and I, we spent our lives very similarly in locker rooms around jocks and around famous people and Super Bowls, and I've been to 27 of them, and you've probably been to more. But music to me, you give – I might go see Billy Joel in New York on Thursday night just to go do it, you know? Show me this. Tell everybody what we're looking at because we're radio here.
You are? Okay, you're looking at a picture of Todd Rundgren in Central Park in the mid to late 1970s. Took a photo there, and then here's a photo of
these are your pictures. These are
my pictures. Yeah, Peter Frampton in Central Park, and that's when Frampton and the Frampton Comes Alive tour. But I was on Peter Frampton way before that, and I told everyone, hey, this guitarist for Humble Pie is phenomenal.
Hey, hang on a second, but is
Todd
this
Rundgren
Peter Frampton?
That's right.
Peter Frampton? Okay,
right,
great.
And that's Todd Rundgren. So that's what I was reaching for. But I used to love taking photos, and the thing is, you could get close to them, you know, the thing. And those days I had a great Mamiya C-Core camera with the zoom lens and got close to the individuals. And it was great, but I love Todd. Todd is God. And it's funny when you're talking about, you know, getting him on your show. I think you can now. And I was intimidated by him years ago because he was a difficult guy to interview. And I reviewed a concert once when I was in San Diego, and they said, hey, we've got a backstage pass. You want to go meet him? I said, no. They said, why not? I said, I don't want to know that he's a jerk. I don't. I'm not interested. And I didn't do it. Now I would be. I would be interested.
Well, Todd Rundgren, when he comes out, it's on my list to do a couple of things with some old sports writers like you, that we share the alumnus of being, you know, part of the Evening Sun, part of the News American
Yeah.
family. Every year, Molly Dunham brings a whole bunch of
Oh,
us
Molly.
together,
Yeah.
you know, down at the brewery, and we all get together in October usually and have a beer, have a pint, as they say, and tell old sports writer stories and all that stuff. But I, two things I got to do. I'm making a bucket. I'm 55, right? I'm making a bucket list, being that I've attended my last Super Bowl. I've, you know, to my last final flight. I don't know the next time I'll go to a hockey game. I, you know, I've been to 2000 hockey games, but concerts still for me. I'm eyeing up Bryan Adams. I'm eyeing up this Mayor tour in Europe. I'm, you know, waiting for all these shows to come back this year. I'm going to go to the Palestra for a basketball game with Dick Girardi, because we have talked about it since he moved to Philly 40 years ago, and we've been friends, and I've never been to the Palestra. I won't go there without Girardi and a cheesesteak and flatulence to a various degree from one of his places. And I want to go to I want to see Todd Rundgren with you. And I'll come to Connecticut. I'll go to New Haven. Is Totes Place still there?
Yeah, sure. We're going to New Haven. In fact, we're going to New Haven in about 5 minutes, but we're going right down the street from Totes Place. Totes Place is still there. Yeah, I saw Todd in Totes Place.
What's the pizza the place to get there? What's the in New Haven? Where am I getting pizza?
We like Pepe's or Modern, but a lot of people like Sally's. You can go either one of those three.
Can I go to all three?
Yeah, well, Pepe's and Sally's are on the same street, so you can do either one. Go where the line is shorter. Pepe's is my favorite, but Modern's right there. Modern's in a different part of the city, but New Haven Pizza is the greatest. It's the greatest.
My bucket list this year is to go places I've never been and see things I want to see. So, like, I want to see the tulips in Amsterdam, so I'm trying to figure out a concert around that, right? Yeah. So, but here's the deal. I'm going to Tahoe because I've never been. Sacramento, because some of my roots guys went to the Bee. Scott Labar is the executive editor of the Bee.
Yeah.
He's the one that put me on the phone with Steven Tyler and Geddy Lee when I was 15 years old. Like, literally, right? So I'm going to all these places. New Haven's a place I've been. Yeah, I've driven through a million. I've been once in my life. I saw the alarm at Toad's Place on a night there, and I had a slice of pizza, and I took the 2:30 train home, and I'd never seen New Haven in daylight. So I know that's your joint, right? So we got to find a Rundgren place that's like one of those theaters in New York or Long Island, one of Jersey, a place I've never been, Count Basie Theater, wherever he's going to play. We got to find a new place for me, Clark. All right.
You know, the Stones played at Toad's Place one night, too. The Stones played there. I'm not a Stones guy. I'm a Rundgren guy. I'm a Beatles guy. And I love Todd. But it's funny when you were talking about Bowie earlier, just let you know a little known fact. Our daughter's pediatrician was David Bowie's pediatrician, pediatrician in New York. And so we lived in New York. Bowie obviously lived in New York with Iman, and their child went to the same pediatrician as our daughter. And when I went to tell him that, the guy said, "You got to meet him sometime." I went, I don't think so. He goes, "He comes in here all the time." So that I go into the pediatrician's office, and he's got a wall of framed album covers, framed out, signed by everyone. He goes, "You mentioned Todd Rundgren." He goes, "I got Kasim Sultan's autograph up here." And sure enough, there's a Rundgren thing. They had an Elvis Presley ticket. I went, "This is great. I love it." That's what I love about New York. But that's what I love about talking to you, when we can talk about football or music.
I interviewed David Bowie in 1991 on the Tin Machine Tour. I have it's up on Baltimore Positive, so it's a plug. You can go listen to it. And the day he died, which, by the way, will be 8 years tomorrow, because his birthday is January 8th and his death day January 10th. So we're sort of in the middle day. And the day he died, my wife had just survived. She had survived really about 2 weeks, that she looked like she was going to die. And then she turned to live at Christmas time in 15. And then Bowie died. And my wife was on the treadmill that morning, bald, 80 pounds, skin hanging off her, trying to get herself back to shape. And Bowie died, and I woke up and I was stunned, and I found the interview. And when I listened, I thought I was going to embarrass myself by listening, like hearing my voice and like the reporter in me on a phone interview on a tape in 1991. And he talked about his spirituality, and he talked in the interview about how he would want to be perceived on the day he died. And I thought, you know, so I'm a Bowie guy. I'm a Rundgren guy. This whole thing came together because Rundgren was singing Bowie songs. So at a later date, we'll discuss the music of the great Meatloaf and Jim Steinman on our next episode.
Yeah.
Clark Judge, there you go. A little Bat Out of Hell, we'll do that. Like, at Bat Out of Hell, you'll be gone. You always hang out longer. We always bring old cold stories. And the last time I saw you, we were watching Mike Mills sing REM songs was a beautiful thing.
That was a great
night of my life, dude.
That was a great night.
When I think of the great night since the plague, that night with Jim Irsay in New York, Perfect. It was perfect.
It
Hey,
was perfect.
Clark, I love you. Take care. Hi to Leslie. Hi to New Haven. Eat some good pizza. And if the Ravens win this Super Bowl thing, or if Joe Flacco, I'm going to call you back from a historical perspective, and we're going to paint all of this in February based on where we are now and where we will be in the winner's circle, and we'll see how all these quarterbacks work it out.
I look forward to it, Nestor. Thank you so much. Love Baltimore. Love talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Crab cake. You can't get those in Connecticut. You got to come down here to get that. Clark Jones.
Give me a call when you come here. Give me a call when you come here. We're going to get pizza.
We'll get pizza in your place, crab cakes in my place. We're going to do Crab Cake Row the week of February 5th in lieu of going to the Super Bowl. If anybody has any questions, see Chad Steele. But we will be here doing awesome stuff that you expect us to be doing after all of these years. Our 25th anniversary brought to you by Curio and Foreign Daughter, and our 25 Stories of Glory now up at BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.